And welcome in the After Hours, Jay Binkley. My dude, Nathan Williams, wearing his Royals gear, man. Royals are on tonight, man. It's the Dodgers. It's the Mets. The Mets had a 6-0 lead. Now it's 6-3.
I refuse to believe it until I see pitch one of the ALCS that they're not playing baseball tonight.
And we've got Cleveland and the Yankees.
Hurts my soul.
Yankees payroll that's more than the combined Cleveland Guardians, Detroit Tigers, and Kansas City Royals payroll. But that's the game you get tonight in New York. And, of course, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
That's what I heard.
MLB tweeted it out.
In attendance.
So now they're going to take advantage of the cash cow. Yeah. NFL is, so why not Major League Baseball?
Sure. Couldn't get her to Kauffman for either of those games. I don't know what her schedule looks like. I would assume this is because they're at her place in New York during the bye week, and it just happens.
Wonder if she's a Yankees fan.
I have no idea. I know you got the Cleveland connection.
He's a Cleveland fan. He's a Cleveland fan. He's thrown out the first pitch before several years in a row.
We just got Mahomes and Dieter. They're back and forth in game three. That was it.
I like that, though, man.
Yeah.
I like how pumped up Patrick Mahomes gets.
And it was funny online how nobody knew who Garrett Dieter was, thought Mahomes was just like riling up a random Yankees fan.
Yeah, it was Garrett Dieter.
It's gold.
Yeah, it was Garrett Dieter that he was at the. You're right. People didn't know who he was and didn't realize that they were former teammates. That's Garrett Dieter that ended his career at Alabama, of course, with the Kansas City Chiefs as well. I didn't know that. But Patrick Mahomes became a fan like us, man. He was just, you know, in your face. He's into it. He's into the game. Of course, he is, you know, a very, very small owner of 1% of the Kansas City Royals, but he's still an owner at the end of the day, and that's his team.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to think Travis Kelce has the resources to make a similar move if he's a Cleveland fan. I mean, I know he's a big Cavs fan, big Guardians fan. I don't know.
You know what? And the one thing is, and the one thing that's really not talked about is the fact that, Nathan, that they've got the money. Well, I mean, if they get married, forget about everything else, they can buy a team. I mean, literally, they have the money to at least, they have the money to buy a team.
Well, she's worth over $1 billion, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you almost spend everything on that. And, of course, he's worth a ton of money, too, because he's doing everything. His podcast got over $100 million, but they could
He's making
at least
money
get another investor or whatever and buy a team.
Yeah, the amount of money he's making quickly is bonkers. He and Jason both.
Yeah, I think they're both taking advantage of that, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, good players anyway. Great players.
Oh, I saw Mama Kelce is on some reality show now.
That's
crazy.
The whole
thing just keeps going.
It's craziness. So Mets, Dodgers tonight. You going for the Mets here or going for the Dodgers?
I mean, this might sound dumb considering what just happened to the Royals. I think I would have more interest in the World Series if it was a Subway Series than if it was Yankees-Dodgers. I know we'd get Judge or Otani, but nothing about watching the Yankees excites me. I think we're just ready for that to be the case.
Otani, right? Judge would be fun. You'd look at National League MVP going against American League MVP.
It would. It would. And they'd market the heck out of that thing. I just think this run the Mets are on of never dying. I don't know, they got their butts kicked yesterday, but they're leading 6-3 in the bottom of the eighth, a game two right now. I think I'd have more of a vested rooting interest for the Mets than I would for the Dodgers against the Yankees.
And can we stop feeling sorry for the Mets, man? They're the underdog dog team. They have a $218 million payroll.
Sure.
The Mets have the highest payroll. They're still paying guys that have left, but let's not feel sorry for that team.
Oh, I don't. I just want to say they're not the evil empire.
I guess I really don't care about any of them, man. I don't want the Yankees to win for sure.
Yeah.
That's 100%. You know, that's, I guess, put them at the bottom. Dodgers, Mets, I mean, I don't really have a rooting interest in any. Cleveland?
Are we rooting for Cleveland?
No, hell no. They're division foe. You don't want to root for Cleveland. I know that they're kind of the underdog in this story.
I might have pulled for Detroit if they were still playing, though. I might have pulled for Detroit. That was major 2014.
See, I don't know if
vibes.
I couldn't do that either, being an AL Central team.
Oh, I know.
I'd rather see the National League win it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
If the American League and Kansas City Royals can't win it, nobody can. Cleveland will be fun, though. Jose Ramirez, I think, might be the most underrated guy in Major League Baseball. He hit .279 this year. Oh, and by the way, he was one home run shy of being 40-40. I mean, we make a big deal of 30-30, right? And Otani, of course, is 50-50. Jose Ramirez had 39 home runs, 41 steals. One home run shy of being a 40-40 dude. This guy is incredible.
Yet, people don't talk about him in the base stealer speed conversation. like they should.
Because he just doesn't look like a fast dude, you know what I mean?
And I don't know how all of his, you know, the nerdy, the sprint speed stuff lines up with others. But, I mean, yeah, he's had multiple 30-plus stolen base seasons. He's got 243 stolen bases in his career. The guy's as well-rounded as they come and as level-headed as they come. And I think that plays well for you in the playoffs. And during this most recent swoon, is it a swoon if it's 8 years of losing for the Royals? I don't know. Ramirez has been that killer of the Royals.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he's the guy when he comes to the plate, you're like, oh, crap.
It used to be Mauer and Hafner and all these guys in the division. It's been Jose Ramirez.
Yeah, he's very frustrating to watch, but I'm not going for him. And the bottom line is this, and I know you follow the Royals extensively. I know you and Vern did a lot of stuff, a lot of post-game shows this year, and you clearly have followed baseball a lot, Nathan. And bottom line is, how excited are you for next year? Because I know there's a lot of optimism. I will say this. There's one guy that's coming back that will be in the Royals rotation next year that nobody's talking about. Everybody keeps talking about trade Singer and all that, and you got to bring Walker back. No one's bringing up Kyle Wright. Like, that's the dude I want to see what can do. Don't forget he's a member of the Royals. He had to sit out all year because he's been injured. But 2 years ago, he did lead Major League Baseball with 21 wins.
He finished in the top 10 of Cy Young voting in his last fully healthy year. And, Bink, I want to see an investment to replace Michael Walker. I also want Kyle Wright in the rotation in that five spot. What I don't want is more question marks in the rotation. Because you had the four workhorses this season, and the fifth spot was a question mark following what, mid-May, when Alec Marsh came back down to earth? I don't want right in your four spot and then stretching someone like Bubich or Lynch back out in your five spot. Now you have two question marks in that rotation. As long as they supplement Walker's departure, I'd love to see Kyle Wright get a rotation spot.
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, that's the big X factor. I mean, let's not forget about Kyle Wright. And the other thing is, too, is I understand the optimism and getting excited. I don't want to see Michael Walker go somewhere else, but I think he will. It'll be the highest bidder, but I'd love to see Michael Walker back here with the Kansas City Royals. But you got to get production at bats. And I'll play some J.J. Piccolo stuff coming up here in the next segment. He had his kind of the end of the year press conference, and so did Matty Q as far as that's concerned. But, I mean, let's not forget about the fact Detroit's good. Detroit's going places. Cleveland is Cleveland. And Minnesota, they're the biggest wild card I've ever seen. Just when you think they're going to suck, they're good. And when you think they're going to be good, they start to suck. And this year, they just felt tough. But they're not going to be down forever. And the White Sox will be better than the historic. I mean, they have to be. I mean, they were more losses than anybody in the history of baseball this year. Royals got 12 wins off that. So, yeah, I'm optimistic. But yes, but I'm not naive enough to think that this division had three of the four teams in the American League playoffs. Yeah, we can be excited as Royals fans. But guess what? They're pumped up in Motown. They're pumped up in Cleveland.
Well, it's a good point. Cleveland is that team that we now want to emulate, and I believe are on a great track to doing so. You know they're going to pump out a few starting pitchers next year that you've never heard of to keep them in the race. Minnesota weathered, and look, Minnesota's probably going to experience similar injuries in their lineup next season, just like they do every year with Buxton and Lewis and guys
like that. They got a lot going on. Ownership, they're trying to sell their team. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff going on.
They dealt with a lot in that rotation also. And Detroit, Bink, the scariest thing about Detroit is, man, I was watching game one of the ALDS, and they're putting their season stats up there. They didn't have one hitter in that lineup that was above league average in terms of OPS outside of Riley Green. None of those other young guys broke out in the regular season. It was just, well, A.J. Hinch and that bullpen pushing every single button successfully during that run. So the scariest thing in this division is Detroit's offense, their young stars, never really broke out. I say stars, they're big prospects. Never really broke out, and they went on that run. So, and you're right, the White Sox aren't going to be the worst team of all time next year, I would assume.
The division's going to get away with Cleveland, too. What really sucks is when you're watching that other series was the ALDS between Detroit and Cleveland. You're sitting there watching and going, all right, the Royals were 7-6 against Detroit. Yes, Detroit got better, you know, towards the end. Cleveland, they were 8-5. The thing I hated about it is I don't like the format. I never have since Major League Baseball is doing this because the sixth seed should have played the one seed. So it should have been. The sixth seed should advance to play the New York Yankees, and the fifth seed shouldn't have. But the only reason they do it is because they're playing the Astros, and they want to guarantee the number one seed doesn't play a division winner. But am I right, wrong in that? That, hey, you know, the Yankees technically should have played the Tigers.
I mean, that's the way it's gone my whole life until this reshaping that took place 3 years ago is the lowest remaining seed faces the highest remaining seed. And that's still the way it is in the NFL. But it's a straight bracket format now.
Yeah, I know what they're doing. But
you would have loved the Royals' chances against the Guardians. Although I will say, Bink, I don't like saying the Royals were 7-6 against Detroit and 8-5 against Cleveland, and you can measure it that way. I understand that's a fact, but Detroit got the Royals at a bad time. At a good time for Detroit when they were going through that second 7-game losing streak in the span of 2.5 weeks, and then like earlier in the year, there was a Cole Reagans versus Tarik Skubal game. I want to say early May here, and the Royals like touched up Tarik Skubal and won that game. And it's like, okay, well, if you would have faced Skubal later in the season when he was the best pitcher in the American League from June 1 on, I mean, just baseball is a little different. It's obviously harder to judge who is the better team based on such a small sample size compared to other sports. But I would have liked our chances against either of those teams compared to the Yankees.
Oh, 100%. I would have 100% liked that as well. So that's the Royals. We're going to sit there and wait. You got to sit there and wait. And we'll talk about it. J.J. Piccolo will talk today, and we'll talk about what kind of additions you'd want next year. But the Kansas City Chiefs, obviously, spent a lot of time talking about them Friday night, the Fans Football Show. Hey, by the way, go out to this thing. We have a lot of fun. We get really in-depth with the Chiefs, former Chiefs. And Sean Barber and Mitch Schwartz were doing it at 138th or 137th, 138th, whichever one you want to call it, in Metcalf at Buffalo Wild Wings this Friday night at 6 o'clock, and we'll have a good time doing that. But Kansas City Chiefs, of course, the Rashee Rice news came out today. I mean, the surgery, the team kind of said what was going on. You know it wasn't going to be good. I mean, yeah. Rashee Rice had surgery on his poster collateral corner PLC, wasn't the ACL, but as Andy Reid said, quote, it's probably the same result you would get time-wise for an ACL. It takes a while. He'll get into his rehab and get rolling on that. So a typical deal is 9 to 12 months. He's a young guy. Could it be 9 months, or could he get a suspension? Which hopefully that's at the beginning of the year, because if I'm the Chiefs, I'm playing like, well, he's coming back. He'll be ready for the season. Then you want that suspension early. If he's not going to be ready the first 4 games or whatever, you just sit there and play it. Like, he's ready to go, man. And then you take that suspension, you sit back and go, bottom line is, they got a draft receiver. You know it. I know it. We all know it. Maybe you don't. I'm putting words in your mouth, but I'm 100% focused on a wide receiver in round one.
I do. I was just getting ready to hop in there and say that, and I know we can get to it a little bit later, more in depth, but they are absolutely going to have to invest in the wide receiver position. And it's a bummer based on the timing of his rookie, where he's at in his rookie contract, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that soon.
It's time. The time is now for that to happen. But coming up next, put a bow on the Royals, J.J. Piccolo. He talked about what they're going to be looking for in the offseason, his salary constraints, what they have, but we'll talk Royals coming up next. Welcome back. Happy Monday evening. Jay Binkley, Nathan Williams producing the operation. The Jets, speaking of New York, the Jets and the Bills tonight. Hey, man, it's a big game for both these teams. I'm actually looking forward to this.
Things could go south in Jets. I mean, further south for the Jets.
For both teams. There's already a lot of Sean McDermott, you know, squirming around. Do the Bills have enough talent to go forward? They're going to get mixed in with maybe the Amari Cooper trade or with the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll bring you up to date. We'll talk a lot of receiver coming up in a little bit. The Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Also, same as our phone number, 913-586-7965. Did you see this one, Nathan? It said, this station is a straight hater, especially against New York teams. Shaking my head. Well, do you want us to celebrate New York teams? I mean, that was a rivalry. Royals met the Yankees in 76, 77, 78, and 80. That's a rivalry between these teams. And I'll say this for the war in New York. I've been to New York. I was there in 2015 when the Royals beat the Mets in the World Series. Got in the cab. Cab driver said, where are you from? I said, Kansas City. He goes, what are you doing here? So, the World Series, things going on, because they didn't even realize it. And I'll say this. Every NHL team, every MLB team, every NFL team, every NBA team in New York, last decade, 0 titles. Kansas City.
How many do we have here?
Flyover country, USA, 4.
Oh, well, that's more than 0.
Yeah, it's more than 0. Four times more.
Well, and, you know, I don't think I'm a New York hater. I mean, I said I was rooting for the Mets to win the World Series and love the run they're on. I'm not saying they're some scrappy underdog, but out of the 4 left, I'd like to see them win it. I've been to both of those ballparks. I'd say the Yankee Stadium might be the most overrated ballpark in the country. It's You feel like you're in an office building watching a baseball game.
I've never been no that buzz. One. I've been to City. I liked it, but there was nothing around it.
I really enjoyed City Field.
But there, I did too. City Field was awesome, but there was like nothing around it but muffler shops.
It's like New York's version of the Truman Sports Complex. You're just like you get dropped off of a bus station and you're like in this big parking lot. And you're like, I thought I was just in Chinatown down the road here.
It's a very nice stadium.
And LaGuardia, but now I'm in the middle of nowhere. It's really strange.
Very nice. I'd prefer the Mets than the Yankees. 100%. If it came down to it, I'd go for the Mets over the Yankees. And Ryan Stanek's pitching for him and went to Blue Valley right over here.
Yeah, and
from St. Louis.
Say what you want about the way baseball is constructed. I think the Mets owner goes about it the right way and more of a fun way that leads to them coming off less pretentious than teams like the Yankees or the Dodgers. That's all.
Yeah, well, we'll keep you updated on the scores going on. Cleveland, the Yankees get squared away here in about 18, 19 minutes or so. We'll, of course, talk a lot of Kansas City Chiefs coming up later tonight as well. But J.J. Piccolo spoke today, putting a bow on the season for the Kansas City Royals. And here's his plan for this offseason.
You know, generally speaking, when you're looking at left field, right field, that's where you're thinking about. They're your power guys, you know. And we know this ballpark doesn't lend itself to homers, but it does lend itself to slug. So we've got to be more productive there. And that's where I think being optimistic about some of the guys that we have and looking at the experience they have, I think that's fine. Like we shouldn't be writing guys off because they're in their third year in the major leagues. It takes some years to become good major league hitters. Now, along the way, that doesn't mean what Q was able to do this year. You don't help them along. You help them succeed. You know, you don't put them in positions where they're going to fail. So if a left-handed hitter gets a left-handed pitcher, you want to have a right-handed side of that. And if that's how we have to go for the next year or two before guys really become everyday guys, that's the way we'll have to do it. But, you know, clearly, you know, Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi, you know, if Vinny doesn't get hurt, we got three guys over 100 RBIs. I think we would have been the only team in baseball that would have had three over 100 RBIs. They're carrying the lion's share of the offense and the production, and that's okay. So that should take more pressure off of the back end of the lineup. But again, the outfield is a spot that we need to be more productive. A
couple things there. Number one, they were the first team to have three guys over 70 ribs. They were the first team to have over 80 ribs, three guys. They were the first team to have three guys over 90 ribs. And they would have been, as JJ said, the first team and the only team that went three guys over 100 RBI is Vinny gets hurt when he had 97. Clearly, he's would have had 100. It's frustrating. Like, if you look at 2014 Royals compared to this one statistically, offensively, it's no match. Two guys who were 30 stolen bases that year, three this year for the Royals. 74 RBI led the Royals in 14 with Gordon, 19 home runs. I mean, but then you had to win, and you had to put the ball in play, and that was just a winning team, and hopefully some of that rubs off to some of these young Royals.
Well, and that 2014 team was a lot more, I mean, I wouldn't say like polished, but maybe well-rounded in terms of the lineup, where more of the lineup could get you at any time. The Royals lineup this season was so easily, and especially once we saw Vinny Pasquantino came back and he wasn't fully healthy. And look, kudos to Vinny for that miracle. I mean, I thought there was no shot he was going to play another game, even if the Royals went to the playoffs.
Sure.
So shout out to Vinny. But it did feel like if you got through Bobby, you were good to go until he came up again. It kind of felt like later in that season, Salvi was getting tired. You didn't have Vinny in that lineup. And who's going to get you tonight if it's not Bobby? And that 2014 team had a different hero every night.
Yeah, they really did. They were a fun team to watch, and then parlayed to 15. And then, of course, the team had to break up after that. Outfield's what they're going to be looking for. I understand that. Listen, Melendez, can you get something from that? I mean, there's going to be expectations now. I mean, they've got to get more power in their outfield. At least slug. I mean, he's right about that. They have got to generate more power in the outfield. That's just the power positions at left and right field.
Yeah, and slug in the sense of, and JJ nailed this, Kauffman Stadium slug. It's more extra base type than it is balls going into the fountains. The good thing about, this is a loaded free agent class on both sides of the ball. And so, especially with the trend of the last decade where MLB free agents are signed later and signed for less money than you would expect, those middle tier guys at least, with guys like Soto and Bregman and Alonso at the top of this market, you do wonder if the price will get driven down on some of those middle-tier free agents. I would imagine Santander is still out of the price range, and I'm not sure I want him in Kansas City anyway. I got my eyes on Tyler O'Neill from Boston.
Yeah, Tyler O'Neill.
The guys at Sports Illustrated and SpotTrack say he's in that $15 to $18 million a year range. I'm not saying the Royals are going to spend that kind of money, but a guy like that, he hit 30 home runs, 25 doubles this year, OPS above 800. I think he was an all-star, at least a substitute in the all-star game. A guy of that ilk, I think, is needed desperately in that five.
Yeah, he'd 100% fit right in here. Here's JJ when asked if it's considering the offseason trades. Obviously, Brady Singer's been talked about quite a bit. And is KC more desirable to play at now?
Very open-minded to it. If we're going to sustain success over a number of years, it's unrealistic to think that every player that puts on a Royals uniform that came out of our minor league system is going to play all 6 years and becomes a free agent. That doesn't mean we're necessarily wanting to do it. It just may be out of necessity, and a lot of that will just be dictated by the interest other clubs have, because you don't do it just to do it. You do it because you can add to your system, add to your major league team. So the value of the player and the interest that the other teams may have in the player is really going to dictate if and when and how that'll happen.
How much more attractive do you feel like this place will be to players that you want to acquire?
Well, just going through our experience last year, a lot of the free agents, brought that to our attention. You have a potential superstar on the field, so it's certainly going to help. It's not going to hurt. When players reach free agency, they, in my mind, they go through three phases. One, do I belong? Two, how do I stay? And then three, I want to win. And that's when guys reach free agency, they're in that third stage. So they're going to want to go to places that they fit and they believe they can win. And then when you look at some of the foundation that's here right now, I would think we'd be attractive, and Bobby and Salvi would be two of the guys they'd be attracted to.
Yeah, come here, play with Bobby Witt. It's definitely more attractive than when they had to overpay Gil Mesh just to come to Kansas City.
I'm attracted to Bobby Witt. I'll tell you that much.
You get the superstars. I mean, it's a system. Bobby Witt gets on base, Vinny knocks him in.
Sure. And you have a guy that you believe in clutch situations can get it done behind Vinny and Salvi as well. I know we didn't see that in any of the last two postseason games here at Kauffman, but it is a system. You're right. And JJ did speak as well about that guy at the top of the lineup that can be on for that trio to help kickstart that system.
I mean, I like Massey and the way he goes, if he can stay healthy.
I do too. I also, when you think about adding a guy, like I just mentioned, I'm using him as an example, Tyler O'Neill in that five spot. Man, if they were to do something as well at the top of that lineup, and you can shift Massey down to fifth or sixth in that lineup, now you're looking at a bona fide lineup full of big leaguers instead of two or three guys that you're relying on. But I do like Massey in that leadoff spot if they can't find somebody to fill that void.
Yeah, because they want to get someone to get on base and do some damage when it comes that way. But I'd be 100% for Tyler O'Neill. Put him out there in left field and see what you can get. He's another righty.
I don't think the Royals are going after some big slugging DH, right? I think at least from what I've seen from Matt Quatrero so far, and he's going to die on this ship if it goes down, is I'm playing the matchups, playing the platoons. So it's going to be more of an open, does Salvi need a day off? Does Vinny need a day off? If Massey's back is flaring up, does he need a day off? You use him in that DH spot. Guys like Melendez and Garcia are still going to be worked into the lineup that way.
Sure.
But yeah, you need to add a mainstay in that corner outfield spot.
Yeah, the bottom line is, not New York haters here. I mean, it's just, I hate anybody the Kansas City Chiefs do. It's Cincinnati. If the Chiefs are playing the Bengals this weekend, it'll be hating San Francisco. I mean, that's just the way things go, man. I don't love these other places. I like sports, man. I like rivalries. I like sports towns.
Yeah, San Francisco hates the Chiefs, too. At least one of our sister stations does, and we can get into that in a little
bit. I'll get into that. They fear us more than anything.
Sure.
We're in their heads a lot more than they are here. I rarely hear anybody talking about the Niners. Mm-hmm. But over there, they're like, oh, man, we got to beat the Chiefs. Can we beat the Chiefs? Can we beat the Chiefs? And Mason's been banged up, that AC joint sprain, the running back. I like Grindo, though, the guy that they drafted this year. It's their third running back. Because don't think that San Francisco can't run, because Grindo was a dude Chris and I really liked on character concerns
yes,
to come to the Chiefs.
All offseason, all draft
we
season.
Love Grindo. Uh-huh. 100% we love Grindo. But coming up next, wide receiver. We'll go talk to Kansas City Chiefs. Now, will they or won't they? Maybe Andy Reid revealed some things today. And welcome back, Jay Binkley, Nate Williams. producing operation. Dodgers lose. They made it interesting. Two runners on in the bottom of the ninth. But the Mets get the job done and win 7-3.
With Mookie, Teoscar, and Freddie due up, you know, at that. I thought we had something cooking there. But no, it's 1-1 going back to Citi Field.
So there you go. Guardians and Yankees come up here at 6:38. Brian Anderson, Ron Darling, and Jeff Francoeur on the call. That's actually a pretty solid booth. Frenchie's awesome, man.
I do like
Francoeur. He had a great personality with the Royals. Francoeur does a great job with the Braves.
Yes.
I assume he's still doing games for him. And Brian Anderson, I don't like talking about broadcasters that much, but Bob Costas, that wasn't. I mean, I'd really have Brian Anderson. Not that it matters, but Ron Darling, I think, is awesome.
And I'm not sure if today's game is as kind to Bob Costas as it used to be. So I'm not sure Costas has lost as much as everyone likes to lead on. But I do wonder if he's his mode of slow speaking and like teaching the game to you, I think, is not
in his 5-year old school kid baseball. Enthusiasm of ball going over the fence.
Right.
Every time it's hit.
Right.
That was annoying. Did you watch Sunday Night Football last night?
I actually did not. I was watching, was the Mets in, was it last night? Game one of the NLCS? Yeah.
So I'm watching the pregame show on One TV, and, you know, they deal with Dungy and Rodney Harrison and Collinsworth's kid. They do the pregame show. Cause I was reminded of this because I see the pregame show is going on for the Bills-Jets game now. But Rodney Harrison, this is like a big no-no. They were getting ready to go live, and I assume he knew he was on TV, but he pulls his cell phone out. And he looks down at his phone, puts it back in his pocket. As Collinsworth had asked him a question. And then Rodney was really debating whether to answer the question or not. And then he goes, "Can you repeat the question?" On live TV. He wasn't paying attention. Mm. He was watching his cell phone, man.
Yeah.
Put it away, Rodney, man. Yeah. You're paying a lot of money to be on TV now, man.
Well, and I mean, you know, I don't know what's going
question?
On.
Can you repeat the question? Come on, man.
I know. I did not catch that. I did not catch that.
Oh, yeah.
I will say... to Bob Costas' benefit, I think everybody, in person at least, thought Kyle Isbell's home run was out of the park there in game four. And what was at the bottom of the
And it would have been sixth. Without the wind blowing in. So
yeah. The rest of them.
Significant win.
Sure.
But anyway, I just thought that was, and when you talk about people pulling their cell phones out or something, here's someone going on live TV.
Yeah. Not a good look.
And then asked to repeat the question. Although I did see one sideline reporter this week that I appreciate, Evan Washburn. That does NFL like sidelines. Mm-hmm. He'll actually ask questions without nodding his head a million times. Like he'll ask the question and he won't be like nodding in approval to the coach and everything they say. The coach can look at the reporter and say, "You're an idiot," and the reporter will just go, "Yeah," and shake their head. Well, but even Washburn doesn't do that. I like
you
that.
Give me something new to look for when I'm watching on the field interviews.
Oh yeah, watch it. Yeah, the head nodding.
I'm never going like, to be able to see that.
Like, uh-huh. Yeah, they nod the head. Yeah, coach, that's right. Yeah. Might be just pulling something out of his butt, man. You don't know what he's saying. Those make me squeamish anyway when you see those sideline interviews. Not a big fan of those at all. Well, Andy Reid spoke today for the Kansas City Chiefs because this is now a game week with the 49ers. And he talked a little bit about what he would do in a trade situation. And I thought this was interesting because it's something we actually debated last Friday night on the Fans Football Show with Dana Hughes. Here's Andy Reid when he was asked this question about, would you consider trading or is it too hard to learn your offense?
Yeah, Matt, I think it's probably what Adam was saying too. Just I think that helped Juju and his situation coming back in and jumping in. It helped McColl coming back. But I'm not telling you other guys can't come in and help out. So I don't think that's an issue. It's just going to take them a little bit longer to figure it out and get on the same page with Pat and all those things.
So there you go. There
is what you've seen with these other guys that have been in it. But, and I'm not saying that we need to bring anybody else in. You asked the question. I'm just saying that I'm answering your question on that matter.
There were some technical difficulties all through this Zoom call that they had today. But he said, hey, not necessarily I'm going to bring somebody in. But you understand it. I mean, look at what they've done. Look at the track record of what they've done. Juju comes back into the offense. McCole Hardman comes back. Even though it's probably not your first, second, third choice, but he comes back because he knows the offense. Jody Fortson came back so he could run some 14 personnel, some four tight ends in the game because he knows the system. There's a big thing with that for the Chiefs where they'd almost rather sacrifice maybe some ability for knowledge and chemistry.
Well, I think the good thing, and it's not a good thing now until it's addressed, Bink, is I don't think it has to be one or the other. I think this team is so void of talent in that wide receiver room and relatively so desperate if you want to accomplish this three-peat. CDOT said it. I think Cody and Gold have said it. DeMarcus Robinson's coming back to Kansas City. I mean, I'd almost put money on it if I could do that. He's a free agent after this year.
I 100% agree with that.
He's on a last-place team. He's coming back here for a sixth or a seventh-round pick. You can book that. But I don't think the Chiefs are naive enough to think either that he's the solution to the wide receiver room. And the other popular name that everyone throws out there is Amari Cooper. This is a guy that's going to fit under the cap easily. Doesn't look like his best days are totally behind him. And last time he was traded 2 years ago was for a fifth round pick. So the cost on him can't be too high either.
And that's who I'm in the camp of right there, Amari Cooper. That's who I'd like to see because he's played this league long enough. He's been playing since 2015. He's had, four 1,000-yard seasons. He had a 1,000-yard season last year, so he can get used to quarterbacks and then Flacco throwing in there. He can get used to other players. But the one thing about him that kind of makes him different is he's always thinking. Because he went played for Nick Saban in Alabama. Like, he's always thinking. And the Chiefs like thinking man's football players. They just do. There was that game, not this weekend, but the last weekend. He's in the huddle. And then you see Deshaun Watson walk off, and people are like, what's he doing taking a timeout? It's because Amari Cooper had counted the players in the huddle. There's 12. So because of Amari Cooper, say, hey, man, we have 12 players. Like he was thinking of that.
Yeah,
he
absolutely.
Was thinking of that. Are you missing valuable time that you didn't have the bye week? Yeah. You're missing time within that. But I asked Dana Hughes this question, the color analyst of the Kansas City Chiefs, on the radio right here on 96.5 The Fan, and, of course, also former Kansas City Chief. He had an interesting explanation. It really makes you think about it. We'll discuss that next. And welcome back, Jay Binkley. Nathan Williams producing the operation. Everybody's wearing jackets in New York. It must be pretty cold. I mean, it was cooler here today, but I thought it was perfect.
I love today's weather. Yeah. Loved it.
Actually felt like fall. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And real quick, I've been watching this post-game show for the NLCS here. Sean Manaea did an interview with David Ortiz.
Former Royal. The
guy's got a 2.2 ERA in 12 innings this postseason.
And a no-hitter. Or it was a perfect
starts.
Game.
Well, I mean, I just mean this postseason.
No, I know, but in his career, didn't Manaea have a perfect game or was it no hitter?
He threw a no hitter and he did it early in his career
with Oakland.
But I just was sitting here thinking about he's bounced around on a few different teams on short contracts recently. Had a sub 3.5 ERA this year and over 30 starts. Looked him up. He's made 200 starts in his career and his ERA is 4 on the dot. I mean, guys like Odorizzi had more immediate success when they left after the Royals made those trades 10 years ago. Man, Manaea has parlayed that into he has really had a successful career and could get paid again as he'll be 33 when his deal's up. So
he pieced together the Royals' ring. Yeah, Sean Manaea, that was a piece. And actually, when he was drafted, it was the same year as Hunter Dozier, I believe. And Hunter was drafted a lot earlier than him in the first round. So it was more of a signability issue. That's why Manaea came later instead of where Hunter came. But Amari Cooper, we were talking about him. 6 seasons, he's had 1,000 yards. He was traded for a fifth-round pick, but that was when he was 27. To me, that even goes down further. That goes down to like at least the sixth round. Although I'd part with a fifth round, too, because you want to win. You want a 3P. You want to make sure you get the player. He's owed $600,000 at this point. That's where I'd go. Because he's played in this league a long time. Since 2015, you're almost a decade in this league.
I'm salivating over the thought of Amari Cooper joining the Chiefs just the same way we talked about the top of the MLB free agents sort of depressing the rest of that market. I think behind Devontae Adams, Amari Cooper might be the clear second best wide receiver prize at the deadline this year.
And it's affordable on a team.
And there's a lot of contenders that could use that.
Yeah.
I think it's still a fourth or a fifth round pick, and then maybe you get a late round pick back as well. And so, like I said before, I think DeMarcus Robinson's coming to the Chiefs for a late-round pick, and I think you could see something to where, in essence, the Chiefs are out of fourth- or fifth-round pick in exchange for both of those guys. You'd get more of that immediate connection with DeMarcus Robinson.
Although they may not have anybody to catch it with Puka Hurt and Cooper Kupp, you know, always
hurt. Cooper Kupp's coming back, I believe, soon, and then hopefully Puka.
But he goes out all the time anyway now.
Look, DeMarcus is leaving, and the Rams aren't going anywhere this year, and I just think that's not a guy you would expect phone calls for, but due to that familiarity that you brought up last Friday night, that it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, he comes back in. It was a 6-round pick swap as well for Amari Cooper. Wasn't a ton that went on with that, but he's only owed $600,000. But Cleveland's in a mess. Like Cleveland,
oh boy,
needs to go back and just scrap everything. You owe your quarterback Deshaun Watson still $92 million. When he signed his contract, over $230 million, it's all guaranteed. They gave up three first-round picks, amongst other picks, but three first-rounders in 22, 23, and 24 for him. That sinks your franchise. And I'll get the quarterbacks in a minute because we're seeing all these quarterbacks get blasted. They got big money. The quarterbacks, they got paid. Because I'm telling you, this draft class isn't exactly loaded with quarterbacks coming out this year like I felt it was last year. But Dayton Hughes, I asked him the question, being a former receiver and a Chiefs analyst, what does he think? Does he value more bringing somebody in, or do you value more bringing somebody up for the practice squad that's familiar with the Chiefs?
I agree with you on Amari Cooper being a logical pick as far as who's out there. But I'm not necessarily sold on whether or not we should go and get him or anyone off the street or from another team. Because I believe, I mean, obviously part of this argument has been debunked because of Kareem Hunt coming off the street and having success. Juju Smith-Schuster coming off the street, having success. But there was familiarity,
yeah, they were here,
with our organization, with our terminology, with the offensive personnel calls, and the relationship with Patrick, which I think is the biggest part of my argument. I just don't know.
To his wedding, Barbara didn't.
Yeah, yeah, we weren't invited.
You don't know if I was invited.
Well, you weren't invited.
You don't know that.
I 100% know you weren't invited.
You would have gone to Hawaii.
Yeah, he wasn't
invited. Kareem was. Well, go ahead,
50-50.
Hey, he was. Hey, so I feel like Amari Cooper would be great. I just wonder how much we would have to spoon-feed him, how predictable we would be as an offense, if he would get into a position of confidence with Patrick. Recognize when Patrick drops back, when he's throwing the ball, he's not always on schedule. He improvises a lot. That takes time to get in a relationship with your receivers, that they know that when you roll out to your right, you're going to do this. When you roll out to your left, this is where I want you to be. When to go deep, when to come back to the quarterback. All of those different things that I just don't know if, when it's all said and done, Bink, and you're talking about a one-year deal or what would be the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's the rest of the year.
Would that dynamic be better than Nico Remigio, Justin Ross, heck, even Sky Moore, anybody else that's currently on the roster? Like, would we be able to, and I know it's fictitious to think about because you couldn't compare apples to apples at the end of the season, but those guys having flown down to Texas and worked out with Patrick at Texas Tech and gone
and you're missing the bye week.
Yeah, and then having the bye week and having all the OTAs and training camp and post practice and walkthroughs and meetings and then preseason games and regular season games, like would all of that, like would any of that be less than Amari Cooper coming in right now and getting up to speed in 4 weeks?
Dana brings up some good points, but you know, it's a consistent guy that's been in the NFL. Yes, it's going to take some time. As Andy Reid said there, when we were playing him, yeah, it's going to take some time to get up to speed with the offense and things like that. But you know what? 3, 4, 5 weeks, December, could you hit the ground running? The trade deadline is November 5th. That's when the trade deadline is in the NFL. So could you bring him in here and go, I just want guys that can catch it. Here, bottom line is Michael DeRocco, who covers the Jags, he's their ESPN reporter, right? Since 2021, the Jaguars have dropped 113 passes per ESPN research. Most in the league. And we always think the Chiefs are there, right? Because they did lead the league last year. That's 21 more times than the Kansas City Chiefs since 2021. But still, that puts the Chiefs up there at number two. It is frustrating. Yeah, Juju came in and looked great. 7 catches, 130 yards. It was fine. But, and it's a big one, the ball bounced off his hands into Colin Saunders, and he had an interception. And that initially, they missed the extra point. That was a 13-point swing. Like, that's the stuff they can't have.
A little peel behind the curtain here, peek behind the curtain. You and I are sitting in here on Monday night watching the Royals and the Chiefs. I'm doing Vern, and you're doing your Chiefs work. And I'm in the booth over here cutting a Royals highlight. And I come back in. I'm like, hey, Bink, tell me about the Chiefs. What's been going on in the last 5 or 10 minutes I've been gone? And you're like, well, Colin Saunders just ran an interception back 50 yards. I'm like, Bink, get real. So that was hilarious. But you're right. And I think there's obviously many benefits before this, but we talk about the Chiefs winning those sloppy games and the Chiefs knowing how to win and them having a head coach and a quarterback and a defensive leader in Chris Jones and a defensive coordinator of guys who know how to win those close games. That's allowing Amari Cooper and Patrick Mahomes the time to facilitate that relationship as the season progresses is a benefit of that. They're 5-0 and they haven't played nearly their best ball, and they've played without almost all of their offensive weapons.
Yeah, that was almost a complete game against the Saints, and they could have beat them by 30 points, 40 points. I mean, they could have beat them by a ton, but they weren't scoring in the red zone.
It's
that 13-point swing, which was pretty big.
Yeah, and it just sure, and we can point to things like that for almost all of the games, except for really the LA Chargers game, which was just weird from the start. They're going to keep winning games like this. They're going to be in the conversation for the one seed as long as Mahomes stays healthy. If Amari Cooper is ready by the end of December, I'm happy. You've got plenty of time.
Oh, you have plenty of time, and he's a pro's pro. Going to know, again, 6 1,000-yard seasons in the NFL. Just came off one last year in Cleveland with the team going nowhere, doing nothing, playing with that sad culture. I heard Carrington talk about culture with Mitch Holtis last week. He had it, and he was talking about today the culture of the Chiefs. Much different. He has played also. He's played in five postseason games. And in 2018, he had 13 for 171 in those two games and a touchdown. His last year in Cleveland against Houston, he had 4 for 59 in that game there. So he has played postseason football as well. But this gives them a chance to actually be with the winner. I'm for it because I want to keep giving Patrick Mahomes weapons. I want team feed Mahomes.
And absolutely. I think Amari Cooper doesn't have that reputation as a guy who has been in the playoffs because of the teams he's been on specifically. Like last year's Browns, I understand they were a great story. We knew they were out of gas with Joe Flacco. I can't remember who that quarterback was on that Raiders team, but they were on like their third quarterback. That was the year they were like 10-4 or something when Derek Carr got hurt, and they had a third string quarterback start for him in the playoffs, if I'm not crazy. And we knew the team wasn't going anywhere. Amari Cooper's never been on that team that's gone deep in the playoffs. But yeah, he consistently plays well in primetime and in big games. I think he'd be perfect.
Yeah, I think so too. And he would get that familiarity. But I'm on team Mahomes. Feed him. I'll never forget the draft 2 years ago. The one is in Kansas City. We were at Center Block Brewery. We were doing a show, and I was like, hey, man, make tonight about Mahomes.
Well, and
they did, because it was Wanye Morris and Rashee Rice. So Rashee Rice first and Wanye Morris. So those are all offensive picks. Hey, I understand the argument. Hey, Mahomes, he can do anything with anybody. Look at what he's winning. Make it easier on him, because that's not always going to be the case.
And I think Brett Veach, I don't think he's going to do anything crazy. That move probably isn't to be made at all. But in other seasons, he might say, hey, we value that fourth round pick more than Amari Cooper this year. Sure, we'll go get D-Rob or someone else small. In pursuit of a three-peat, I think Veach is, I think he'll have the right mindset to sort of throw that traditional MO out of the window when the trade deadline comes up this year. And I'm excited to see that.
By the way, that quarterback was Connor Cook, that you've never heard from. Again, not even on the back.
Connor Cook.
A milk carton. That was the
Notre
quarterback.
Dame?
In Oakland was a man named Connor Cook, whose career didn't really exist.
I don't know. I don't know if I've heard of the man.
He went to Michigan State. He played played one game in the NFL. That was the playoff game.
Yeah, because whoever the backup was went down in the last week of the season, and it was
Connor Cook.
Yeah, and so you just knew that team wasn't going anywhere, and that's been a weird theme of Amari Cooper's postseason career, but he does perform better.
Matt McGloin, too, is there.
McGloin is who I was thinking of.
And then Connor Cook was the one that was third.
Okay.
Yeah, but McGloin was there, too, as well. Nick Sirianni, some interesting things said today. Doug Peterson, is he going to be out? And there's a lot of things going on around the NFL that's driving me nuts. We'll discuss that next.